From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 368, providing self-service using Azure Pack with guest Damien Flynn. Recorded Friday, April 18th, 2014. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Damien Flynn, and he's an MVP in System Center and Data Center, and is the Infrastructure Technical Architect for Limebridge Technology. And they are in Ireland, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
We're global, actually. Locations across the planet and headquartered out of Boston.
Oh, there you go. But you've got that twang, sir.
Yeah, I'm based out of Ireland for sure. I'm on the West Coast.
And sort of living and breathing the cloud lifestyle these days?
Yeah, spending a fair amount of time in the Microsoft and the OpenStack worlds, but primarily in the Microsoft world.
I really appreciate that. And for me, you know, I learned System Center back when it was MOM, and it was not about cloud. It was about how do we understand all of these machines we've got? I remember, you know, even before virtualization, MOM was important. And it's amazing how well System Center has morphed into, first we took care of virtualization, and now it's really like this cloud instrumentation tool suite.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just seems to continue to morph when we're watching things like orchestration, which essentially got introduced just in 2012. And again, we're seeing a morphing happening as we move into service management automation. So this is definitely a platform that is evolving at a faster pace all of the time as the cloud becomes more and more important to us.
So did you say Windows Service Automation?
Service management automation.
Service management automation. Okay, so the automating of the management of services.
Yeah, pretty much, yes.
It's a good name, right? It's just, I don't think that's a well-known acronym yet.
Yes, SMA in this particular case, it's just one of Microsoft's newest long names that they like to collect as time goes on, especially in this system center space. We've got a lot of these long, tricky names trying to understand what they're supposed to be doing. And
all right, I get your name. Now, what does it do? So is SMA actually a product?
Yeah, SMA is a product that was introduced with the Service Pack 1 release of System Center 2012, and it's packaged with the Orchestrator tooling. It is essentially an evolution of what Orchestrator, or the original Palace, was, and it's embracing Microsoft's workflowing technologies that were, included or leveraged with PowerShell 3.0. Mm-hmm. So SMA, in this particular case, allows us to take that a step further and then use it to provide resilient automation procedures for tasks that are running in the new cloud platform.
So is part of this really focused on, so there's so many tools in Azure, for example, to deal with failover and elasticity, at least in the latest incarnations. How much does SMA have to do with on-prem versus cloud?
It's pretty much the on-prem answer for a lot of those functionalities.
Okay.
It's wiring it directly into the Azure Pack, essentially, for on-premise, so that we can do things like put in that extra procedures that are needed when you want to commission or decommission a cloud and have a set of automated steps follow suit.
Nice. And you just said Azure Pack, which I know is also a new thing.
Yeah, we're collecting these things like little marbles at this point. Azure Pack,
I love
Azure
it.
Pack is the newest incarnation of a portal. And Microsoft, definitely with the System Center suite going back, is probably to 2007 or 2008, have had a number of portals for their cloud platform. The first of those being with Virtual Machine Manager, and then we had the self-service portal, and then version 2 of that, and then you we got introduced to the cloud service portals, and finally we've got yet another one, and this is the Azure Pack. This one is going to stand out considerably different from everything that's come before it, as it's based essentially on the same frameworks that is used in the public cloud. And the other emphasis that we're seeing a lot more of is, unlike all of the other portals, which were essentially dedicated to the task at hand, this one is a framework, and it is very much built on an open SDK with a whole lot of extensibility. And we're seeing third parties even start to extend on it as well at the moment. So this one is going to be here for a while, I think.
So once again, we're seeing technology that Microsoft's had to develop internally to run Azure being made available to us to run our substantially smaller clouds ourselves, as well as interact with Azure?
Absolutely.
Okay.
This one will interact with Azure in its current incarnation, really through the SMA interfaces. But I think it's fair to expect that as we see newer incarnations, it's going to replace functionality that we get in tools like App Controller. And we'll see a lot of those, I expect, unify directly into this Azure Pack.
So they're sort of pulling together these pieces and coordinating things. And I mean, I'm looking at the notes for Azure Pack, and they talk a lot about multi-tenancy.
Yeah, it is definitely the starting framework for pretty much everything that we need to do now with cloud. They've taken in all of the primary pillars that we need to address to deliver a successful cloud. And this is definitely where Azure Pack is coming into play. And even things like authentication for those tenants, that now is enabled through federation services. So as a hoster, we can easily use the customer's identification. That might be from their enterprise or even their Twitter or Facebook accounts. But even in an enterprise, we can do very similar things, offering obviously our internal credentials.
Sure.
Or if we're partnering with other companies, we can easily federate with their identification too.
Well, and multi-tenancy makes sense to me if you're running Azure. It's just for me as a guy running an enterprise system, do I care about multi-tenancy? Is this about isolating different departments? Like, what do I get for that complexity?
Yeah, well, that I suppose is the first questions you ask when you start building your cloud for an enterprise.
Sure.
What is it that you're attempting to deliver? And I think it is exactly what you suggested, segregating different business units or different service providers, or maybe even segregating the different development activities between staging and QA and
sure.
production.
Well, and you may have some customer-facing systems or some vendor-facing systems. Like, I kind of like the idea of using that tenancy model so that you have a much deeper level of isolation, or more relevantly, you have very specific controls around how you connect those things together. All too often, I feel like we've built an internal network, and you're either all in or you're all out.
Or we start putting in lots of extra firewalls and building rules and walls and punching holes between them. And before we know it, we've got another block of Swiss cheese with nobody really having an idea of what side is up and what side
right.
is down.
So here I've got a framework that really understands the idea of isolation between tenancy so that I can make very specific holes where I need to. And the rest of the time I can presume it's closed off.
Yeah, absolutely. And then obviously we've got common denominators between these, and I suppose the network layer is that.
Yeah, network layer. I bet my ADFS is probably shared amongst everything. I might want a few service bus clouds available for shared tools as well.
For sure. And that's one of the things that the Azure Pack introduces us to is previously all of the portal solutions we've had all bolted on essentially directly to Virtual Machine Manager. So your cloud that we offered was essentially infrastructure only, virtual machines, where Azure Pack now actually takes that service bus and allows us to deliver that as a service on premise. So it is definitely copying exactly what we see in the public Azure offerings to take a lot of those services and allow us to provide those as services internally within our environment.
My initial reaction when I hear that we're taking technology Microsoft's made for Azure and we're making it available to us, it sounds like a good idea. And then you just think, have I got the same problems they have? Like, can we actually justify having this capability? But I feel good about multi-tenancy now, having talked to you about it, where it's like, okay, I could see where I'm not going to have thousands of tenants necessarily in my infrastructure, but I might have a half a dozen, and that will actually be valuable.
Yeah, that I think there's some major value points. Like one of the areas that we can now deliver things like websites. So I'm pretty sure most enterprises have got a few servers that are built into little farms or groups of servers that are built in small clusters and load balance. And those servers might have 1 or 100 websites sitting on them. And then there'll be a few guys that will understand exactly what's located in different areas of the network and what firewalls are configured. We can now go and use things like the Azure Pack and leverage the IIS farm technologies and essentially start delivering a single self-service portal to deliver essentially that web environment as a platform.
Right.
So we can build it up properly. And then if we adopt that, it means then from an infrastructure perspective, everything is nice and flat. But more importantly, from the tenant's perspective, he's got into a habit, essentially, of packaging up these websites now properly. And as a result, he can now take that package and essentially distribute it off onto the public cloud platforms, let that be an Amazon or Azure.
Sure.
So the benefits start to roll in for everybody at that point.
Well, and this concept of application packaging, I think, is wildly important. You know, I spend at least as much time on the development side as I do on the IT infrastructure side these days. And getting developers to get their head around the idea that your app is not just the code you wrote. It's also the environment, the configuration, how the data works together so that we have a real package of everything that describes this application so that we can move it from place to place and make multiple instances of it. Is there actually a standard now for what that should look like, what a package is?
I think there's a few different standards. And I think with finally, something like the Azure Pack on-premise, we can get to that point mm-hmm. where IT delivering that service to the developer for hosting this no longer starts blurring lines where I'll send you the ASP files and you just pop them over to that folder.
Right,
and,
the big start, lie.
We're all good.
the giant lie.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the deployment was smooth and it happened in 10 seconds. Okay, yeah, of course it did. Now we can actually turn around and tell the developers that, look, you run the QA environment, so create your package. So go back into Visual Studio or whatever happens to be your tool of choice.
Right.
You create that package. So if it's for websites, then we're doing something like a web deploy package. If it's for SQL, then we've got SQL DAC and so on. So there's different package standards now definitely coming out of certainly the Microsoft ecosystem for the types of payloads that we're delivering. But more importantly, then the developer doesn't need to work with IT. They can do everything in their own cocoon, create their product packages, and then use the self-service abilities to actually try and host it and validate that it's working. And keep repeating that till they got that packaging just down right. And then as that's happening, then as QA gets approved, then that package can easily be taken and distributed over to the IT guy saying, right, now we have got a release approval. Here's the package that we delivered. Upload it and let's go live. Or nice. Let's roll it back if things go wrong. This is definitely...
Or do a partial deploy. Let's just put this on a couple of these servers and trickle some traffic to it to see how it behaves. I mean, that to me is what's really, you know, starting to do this work around what we're calling today DevOps. That seems to me to be the interface point that everybody can relate to, that development actually getting something into a manageable package that is reliably deployable is the point that operations wants to touch to so that we can do all of these other things. We know how to push it to a different kinds of testing environments, maybe distribute it across multiple environments to do the testing faster. We can put it into staging and exercise some load testing. We can partially deploy into production and see behavior on just a couple of servers. Like that ability to get one package that would do all of those things, that's an awesome goal. I think there are relatively few people out there that can say they're there.
I think that's a fact. I don't think there's a lot of people that can actually say they're there. But I think that also goes back to the fact that the tooling has never been consistent.
Yes.
And now that we're starting to get all of these new pieces adding into the System Center and the Windows Server stacks, the tooling, certainly in the Microsoft ecosystem, mm-hmm. Visual Studio, that's definitely improving leaps and bounds over the last year or two. And I think we are definitely getting to a point where as more people start to understand what this technology offers and even start piloting and embracing some of the ideas behind it, it will be a little bit like Agile. It will quickly become a standard that I think most people will want to utilize.
Yeah, but and also abuse. You know, Agile suffers from everybody having their own interpretation of it. I'm also wondering if hanging the word Azure to this is almost a mistake, because it doesn't feel like I have to use Azure to take advantage of the Azure Pack.
That's a fair point. The Azure Pack, as its naming convention goes as well, is one of those that has definitely had the ill-fated naming of Microsoft, where its initial iteration was actually known as Windows Azure Services for Windows Server.
Which is accurate. You know, this is the disease right there, Damien. Tech people, we give accurate names that we understand because we help build it. And then you show it to someone else, and if they are in the place where my boss has told me I can't use Azure, as soon as I see Azure in the title, I can't look at that technology.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's fair. On premise, we're calling it WAP now at the moment rather than Windows Azure Pack.
Love it. You've repurposed WAP, because the old WAP was bad. This is good WAP.
This is good WAP. It's definitely good WAP.
Oh, I love it. So where do you get this from? Is it just freely downloadable?
Yeah, absolutely. It is essentially available for free to anybody that has a System Center license.
Right.
But of course, if you don't have, there's really nothing stopping you running out there and grabbing it anyways. It's installed as part of the web platform installer.
Okay, so bundled with the web platform installer. Now, and it's part of System Center Operations Manager?
It's essentially... not dependent on any single piece of System Center is probably a fair way to say it. You could decide that I don't want to do infrastructure and I'm only interested in maybe delivering databases and websites, in which case you could easily go grab a machine, launch that web platform installer, deploy an express copy of the Azure Pack, and log in as the administrator and hook up your web farm and hook up your databases, and you're essentially ready to go. Now, adding System Center into the backend is definitely advised. There's a lot more things we can do. So, for example, Operations Manager can be leveraged for its data warehouse functionality. So if you happen to be monitoring the environment that you're running your databases, or in this case, your websites, then you're going to get a lot more rich information. So metering, for example, immediately starts becoming available, which is one of those things we need in a cloud to obviously adhere to the premises of a cloud.
Yeah.
But if you want to just get hands dirty and start figuring out how can I get things running in Azure Pack, then turn on a metering later, integrate SCOM a little bit later down the line.
Sure, sure. I think that's really interesting that we can get started with this, because System Center is not a trivial thing to get up and running with. Like that's a big piece of software with not cheap licensing fees either. Like it is not a lightweight. This is the big boy's toy.
This is definitely, without a question of a doubt. When we start thinking about deploying our clouds to deliver infrastructure, the first thought that comes to mind is we deploy simply a copy of Virtual Machine Manager. It, in the WAP world, isn't that simple. So I, of course, need my Virtual Machine Manager to run my virtualization platform. But on top of that, there's another new little module, Service Provider Framework, that also needs to get deployed, and it's kind of the super glue that sits between WAP and Virtual Machine Manager. And its job, quite simply, is to have a HTTP endpoint, which is firewall friendly, that the WAP can connect to. And then on the other side, it runs essentially PowerShell commandlets or scripts against Virtual Machine Manager, telling it create a virtual machine or a cloud or query information back, and then send that response back to that HTTP layer into the Azure Pack.
Right.
So all of a sudden, I've now introduced two components. And then again, I want to do my metering and understand what's happening in my cloud for capacity. Then I need Operations Manager, and go ahead and then tell Operations Manager that you need to talk to Virtual Machine Manager and monitor the hosts in Virtual Machine Manager. And of course, tell Service Provider Framework that you've introduced Virtual Machine Manager. And then, of course, before we're finished, we need that service management automation that we talked about, which is that last piece. And again, he needs to be told or introduced to the Service Provider Framework to let him be aware that we can now automate things in our virtual cloud. So yes, it definitely isn't a small toy. This stuff takes a lot of thinking about, but once you have spent the time and effort on building it, you're going to start paying off reaps and bounds for this.
But I think, you know, we've had a number of shows over the years where we've talked about various pieces of System Center. And, you know, it's easy to understand. You know, I find there's two kinds of System Center guys. When they get involved with System Center, they come in through the configuration manager side because they're trying to manage a lot of standardized servers or and a ton of desktops. Or they come in from the ops man side because they're dealing with how do I keep track of all of these VMs I'm running. And it's one of those two pieces. And then they start adding in VMM is awesome. Right. As soon as you're managing more than half a dozen virtual machines, you want VMM. It makes your life amazingly better. But getting into service manager and orchestrator, like those are more complicated commitments. And trying to see how do I get all these things to sync together. That for me, looking at service management automation and the Windows Azure pack for Windows Server is exciting because it feels to me like these are more, okay, you've got all these parts. Let me show you how they sync together.
Yeah, for sure. And you're right. In these particular scenarios, you could ignore your service manager and even your orchestrator. Mm-hmm. Of course, at some point in the future, you will want to do IT governance and stuff like that. So you will bring these back in, specifically right. The service manager side of the world. But it definitely isn't required out the door. We can simply focus in on the key areas that we start to feel comfortable with, as you mentioned, virtual machine manager and operations manager.
Well, orchestrators felt like a particularly intimidating tool because it's got that blank screen effect. You could do anything. Now, what do you want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, service management automation will be quite similar, especially for an IT pro, because essentially all of the flows are going to be PowerShell scripts. So if you are a little bit adverse to dealing with PowerShell, you're going to be looking at this and I'm not really sure I want to go here yet. But there is quite a lot of samples provided by Microsoft. And once you start learning a small little piece about what this can do, it's like one of those things you get addicted to pretty quickly, and more and more automations just appear to, what if I could do this? And
yes.
Then something starts spilling up another script and away we go.
It's awesome. So, and I want to recap a little bit here, because again, I think there's these sort of barriers for folks that are listening to say, okay, well, I shouldn't look at this. Azure Pack for Windows Server doesn't require Azure. It is about bringing Azure capabilities down to Windows Server. Azure Pack for Windows Server doesn't require System Center, but it sure works better with it.
That's correct. Yes.
So it's all worth looking into this. As soon as you're dealing, I guess the question is, what's the threshold at which point I think I should grab Azure Pack?
I think curiosity is always the best threshold. If you want to improve your IT services, Azure Pack is going to be the front door. I think there's no question Microsoft are going to make this the front door for their cloud OS, specifically on-premise and probably in the hybrid scenario as we move forward. Mm-hmm. Getting going really means I need one virtual machine, launch that web platform installer, and install the Express Edition. It does everything from setting up the database to actually giving you a portal ready to log into. At that point, we have essentially what we call providers. And those are extensions to the Azure Pack that allow you to provide service, databases, websites, automation, or virtual machine environments. You make a decision where you want to start. The easiest one out the box is databases. So you just point it at the database server with credentials that are privileges to allow you to spin up more instances or remove database instances.
Right.
And you can self-serve that straight away. Because you've probably already got that database server anyways, where you've got guys hammering on your door saying, I need a new database, I need a new database. Let them self-serve that, prove the concept, understand that works. And then once you're kind of satisfied with that, then start taking a look at maybe we'll deliver some websites and build a small farm out and hook that up as a new provider. And then let's bite the bullet. Add in virtual machine manager and operations manager, turn on service automation and get your metering and everything online. And before you know it, you're going to have a portal that looks and feels just like the public Azure service, except you're running it on premise.
Right.
And it's completely open. So as developers, and every organization has them, you can start adding more and more functionality into this yourself and customize it to make it look and feel the way your organization wants to, or not use these portals at all.
And how much time as we as IT people today are dealing with just developers asking for VMs? I need something to test in. I want a new one of these or a new one of those. So just being able to have a standardized way to lay down these templates so that they can get what they want.
I think that's happening every day of the week.
Sure.
If we go back and take a look at our help desk, there's no question there's tickets in every other day saying, I need a VM. I need four VMs. I need a network.
Now, what about cleanups? Now I automate it, so these guys are building as many as they want. How do I set down government so they don't just fill me with stray VMs that nobody knows have any use anymore?
Well, that definitely is where Azure Pack starts to stand out, especially when you introduce things like metering in the back end.
Right.
Because you can do that, show back, produce the report to them and saying, if I was charging you, this is what it would have cost.
Right.
Or if you happen to be running a cost-centric IT environment,
yeah,
then you can go the opposite way and says, no problem, you can have these, but it is going to cost you this up front.
Right.
The whole tenancy thing is built around quotas and control. So the nice thing with Azure Pack is it works with this whole idea of a plan. So I want to offer you the ability to deploy 4 virtual machines in your plan. You subscribe and you pay for that plan or not, depending on your organization. And then somebody comes back and says, well, I actually need 5. Well, you can create add-ons for these plans, which is, here's an add-on for 2 more virtual machines, and this add-on is sold at a quarter the price of the actual full plan. So as a result, you are actually delivering IT as a service for virtual machines or websites, and then you have that ability to start charging and controlling. And if you produce your reports from the metering, you can start figuring out then from things like operations managers reports that are coming to the Azure Pack to say, you subscribed for 6 machines, you've deployed 6 machines, but they've been sitting idle. The CPU is powered up and it's been running flat line for the last 3 weeks. You're really sure you want to keep paying me for this services?
So you can push the folks you're serving to clean up their own mess.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you automate cleanup? Like, the classic one for me are test instances.
Again, it goes back to that automation thing.
Right.
There's nothing you can't do at this point. You can take a look and say, I'm going to give you a cloud or a tenancy, essentially, for running your test environment. And this is where governance kicks in. I can request that through something like Service Manager, saying I request that tenancy for a period of 6 weeks.
Right.
Approve that through the management chain, and I can kick off an orchestrator run book to essentially go ahead and create the tenancy and inform the user the tenancy has been created. But more importantly, when the clock ticks 6 weeks, I can kick off the orchestration, either to Orchestrator or SMA again, to reverse the process. Tell the guys that your time is up and we're doing a cleanup. Or, of course, if you want to be a much more professional IT organization, probably at 4 weeks, you might want to send a note back to the dev team and say, in 2 weeks' time, we're going to delete. Do you want to think about going and asking for an extension at this point?
Right. Yeah. You know, in 2 weeks, we're going to shut this down.
Sure.
Well, I can see, you know, I've got guys who are doing rapid fire testing, you know, as part of their continuous integration process, and they need to stand up 10 VMs for 20 minutes. But they get sloppy about cleaning those up. So the idea that I could actually automate the provision of those 10 VMs for an hour, and after an hour, I'll kill them unless they go through the extra step and say, hey, I need them for this long, and that takes an extra approval. It's like, I'll give you any VM you want for an hour.
Absolutely. And then that stuff that doesn't obviously need any service manager in it at all, you can spin up tenancies, have the service management automation take a look at it, check the time that virtual machine has existed. And if it's beyond that hour, it's nuke time. And just have that thing running in the background every 5 minutes doing a check, or maybe once an hour running a check. Is there anybody here that's more than an hour old? And if so, bye-bye.
Yeah.
And if not, then we'll skip on to the next time.
And that's a great tenancy scope too, that there's this tenancy area specifically for short-lived, high-velocity testing.
It's brilliant also for proof of concept. So when you want to actually give a guys a demo area, this is fantastic.
And you're not accidentally exposing real data or anything like that. It's got a can that you can count on.
Absolutely. You can spin up a demo area, put a nice quota on it, allow lads to go in, play with it, and think, yeah, this is pretty cool. We can use this. And you're never worrying about people creating lots and lots of stuff in that demo area, because it's essentially resetting itself consistently.
And you can actually bill back to the sales team to say, this is what running that demo area is costing us. Does it make more sense for you to actually run it up in Azure or on a cloud provider that's going to really bill you as opposed to my measurements?
Without a question of a doubt.
And when it gets, you know, the number of sales guys starts growing, that we have many, many more instances running. Like, I just love that. It's so hard to keep track of who's putting pressure on what.
the options that we start getting available to us are just amazing. There's one more feature that's probably worth calling out.
For sure.
That instead of just delivering virtual machines, we can deliver what are now known as roles, VM roles. Mm-hmm. And essentially, we get a gallery now. So when I go in and say, I want a new virtual machine, you can go and do the normal Azure type thing and say, I'd like it to be a Windows Server 2012 or an Ubuntu server. And you set the sizings for the hard disk and for the RAM. But you can also, in that gallery, customize it with your own stuff. And you could turn around and say, I need a domain controller, or I need an Exchange server,
right,
or I need a SharePoint server. And essentially, that delivers a pre-canned server that is not only running Windows, but is fully configured with that application stack that you want to test on as well. So you've got somebody that wants to learn how to use Orchestrator, then fine, spinning that up in the demo area, allow them to connect in, and the second they connect, Orchestrator is already sitting there installed. So let's not waste any time. Let's get straight into actually playing with that blank canvas.
Right. Well, you get back to this package model of, I need to deploy a scalable instance of this app. And that app represents three web servers and a couple of backend servers and a clustered database and load balancing infrastructure here and a failover solution there. Like, you could make quite a pack that would then come out all at once and stand up for testing or for evaluation or for demo. It's not just a website anymore.
Correct. Yeah. And then you're mixing what essentially is infrastructure and platform services at this point. There is no one unified pack, I think, that delivers the whole lot.
Sure.
Just yet. You still got a few separate packs for the infrastructure and for the websites. But I think looking at what we're seeing, that unification definitely isn't far away.
This is exciting stuff, Jamie. I'm so glad I had a chance to chat with you about it, because it sort of digs into a problem we've been trying to do for a long time, just providing self-service, but so much more here that it leads to, I think, a much happier operating environment between development, operations, and management.
For sure. And it also deals with the IT guys trying to struggle with, do I want to do IT and IT as a service?
Yeah.
Now, it becomes very easy to start delivering such a thing without worrying about all the red tape that might be proverbially wrapped around this thing.
Well, and then we're no longer at a competitive disadvantage with actual cloud providers, because essentially we're using the same tools.
Absolutely, without a question. And yeah, we're making it easier as well for the developer guys to get to that cloud, because if they can deliver successfully on-premise, then there's a very, very high chance that they can take that same package and deliver that in the public cloud.
Absolutely.
Or in a hybrid solution, of course.
Yeah. All of those options are now there to sort of say, do you want to run this half and half? Do you want to run it all up there? Or are you going to run it all here?
Correct, for sure.
Damien, really fun to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Richard, thank you for having me.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.